It's funny how often I do podcasts considering how poor I am at talking. Or how poor my talking ability is. I don't know.
It's really weird I do podcasts.
Yeah, why did we do this?
I don't know.
It's my fault.
It's your fault.
Yeah.
It's your curse.
It's because in 2003, a company was formed in Texas, and they made a web show, and then it became the whole thing. And you ever heard of Rooster Teeth?
Are they the first podcast of all time?
No, but they're the ones I got into, man. They were early in the game, I feel like. Rooster Teeth, gone now.
Oh, no.
But there's Robot Chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's still around. Yeah.
And chicken nuggets.
There's robot chicken and chicken nuggets. Yeah. It's all rooster related.
Forever. Always
and
forever.
Didn't Post Malone open a chicken place of some sort?
It's possible. I don't keep up with Post Malone.
I don't know, Charlie.
It has something to do with chicken fingers.
Okay.
And they sell just chicken fingers. It's like Popeyes, but.
But not chicken feet.
Well, they might sell those.
It reminds me of during COVID, I feel like. Molly and I, we ate bags and bags and bags of Tyson chicken fingers.
Chicken
nice.
Yeah.
No, the
oh,
fingers.
Fingers.
The fingers specifically. Because I don't know, there's something about them. They just slide right in.
No.
I like dino nuggets.
Oh, and the dino nuggets are fun too. Sometimes that's really good if you're having a bad day. Yeah. You just want to like feel like a kid again at the end.
I love mashed potatoes and gravy, and it's like a volcano, and the dinosaurs get extinct from it.
See, I feel like the last few episodes we've been talking to people who I don't relate to at all, and finally I'm hearing something and I'm like, yeah. Because it was Ron who was like mountain biking and going on adventures, and then there was Rich and Alistair who are just these like smart guys getting up into all sorts of projects. And then
we love dino nuggets,
mashed potatoes, and dino nuggets.
I
That's
say
great.
Me. Yeah. I don't really particularly love them, but no. I will eat them.
Survival.
Yeah.
I did make you mashed potatoes for
That's true. For specifically
dino
for dino nuggets.
For dino nuggets. Yeah. Oh, so, yeah.
For your volcano
I've never heard
dino,
of dino nuggets.
Nugget,
but I can imagine.
Yeah. Dinosaur shaped nugget.
I recently had this is dumb. Never mind. I'm not going to. I was going to tell a story. It's a gravy anecdote, which is uninteresting.
It's not.
I'm going to cut it out because it's not interesting.
It is interesting.
But I recently made the discovery that the gravy at KFC, which I really like, it's chicken gravy. And I like it for never. Like,
no
never
way.
Really so when I was at, I know. Because I was at the grocery store, like, I want to get like what they have at KFC. I wonder what they have. And it just
chicken.
Didn't Not occur to me. And then, chicken. I had outside help tell me. Yes. Yeah.
It's the good.
So that's my so that's my anecdote.
I like the extra crispy gravy.
Extra crispy gravy?
When you leave it on the pan.
Oh. Yeah. Does it like make like gravy chips?
Well, if you do it in like a non-stick pan and you leave it on too long, it chips real bad.
Nice.
Chips real bad.
I bet it does. Or real good?
Yeah.
Oh, real good.
No, it's not good.
Crunchy gravy.
I do remember getting a meal like that once and saying, it tastes like this got left on the burner, or maybe you accidentally spilled some cleaner in it.
Yeah. Anyway. Welcome to the Wusos podcast, where we talk to, about the cafe and the people connected to it. I'm one of your hosts, Terry.
And I'm Jason.
And today, this month, we're talking to Charlie and Emily from Dream Cloud. Who I think it's good you guys moved out of Duluth, so I don't have to say that you guys are having the best coffee in Duluth in front of Jason.
You could, and I would be okay with that.
But I it was such a bummer when you guys moved out because it was so convenient to go downtown. But I also so we'll get into that right away because the reason you moved out, as far as I understood, was because downtown was kind of tricky to get to for some people, or was there other reasons beyond that too? I just remember reading that at some point.
No, I mean I think a lot of times people extrapolate ideas that they might have assumptions about, and especially in Duluth that happens, believe it or
not. I just read about parking mainly. So
But if you go to a small town in the country,
they never do that.
Yeah.
No, no, the assumptions just take longer to reverberate in Duluth sometimes, and it was really just based on the opportunity to own the building, and it was a great combination of details that made a great space. And, you know, if we could have kept both spaces going and wanted to have multiple businesses, we would have, but we didn't, and
a bit much.
But if we would have had an opportunity to buy a building downtown, we probably would have, and then we wouldn't have taken the opportunity to move up north because we would already own a building downtown.
So it's all along the North Shore, the scenic North Shore. worth going to. I also think with that whole situation is, I can understand wanting to make that shift because it's like kind of a dream situation, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's a really nice place that they live above. And right, you guys live above, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that's exactly what I want at some point. So I don't know what the shop below would be. I don't know if it would be a coffee shop, but something, you know. Just
be whatever you want to be.
And then you have the curse of, on your day off, it's like, if you were open, it'd be like, uh-oh, we better go ask those guys how to do this. Knock, knock, knock.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't know, but they're upstairs. Knock, knock.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Upstairs, Dave lives there now.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not that accessible, which I think is good. If we lived upstairs of a downtown building, I think we would have many visitors.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to wait for the sun to set to hit a certain mirror. And
So what's it like then? Now, knowing, now clarifying that it wasn't some sort of gripe against downtown.
No.
What's it like, and what are the differences between the two locations and likes and dislikes and whatnot?
I mean, there isn't a lot of dislikes up there, to tell
you
the truth. It's really nice. We have a garden, outdoor space, which people really love and we love, and it's kind of hard to compare it, honestly, from our space downtown to up there. It's just a totally different life, totally different thing. It's like much more, I mean, downtown was us, but we were also in like a very different place when we created that place to where we created the place up north. So like that is like us completely. It was like thought about a lot. It's like our home.
Did it benefit from having the experience of working
in
the downtown?
I think so. Yeah.
Downtown.
Yeah. It definitely, we thought about a lot of things we'd change or a lot of things we wanted to do or didn't want to do or
One lovely experience we were lucky to have was still operating downtown while living on the shore without being open up north. And we spent hours going in or coming home and comparing the existences, comparing the business, comparing the social and cultural values, everything. And we beat down every sort of scenario that we could possibly think of. And keeping two spaces, having one, making more, you know, everything. The ideas of franchising and the whole concept of creating possibilities. And then kind of after a little while of expanding thought processes, we then started distilling down into like, okay, what do we really want out of life?
And so another aspect I had read about is the fact that you guys can make stuff now.
Yeah.
But what I've been curious about is because we had planned this podcast a couple times, but you guys are very busy.
I'm wondering,
has that panned out? Are you guys able to find the time to utilize that space to make stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah. I think we're starting to find more of a balance of that or more of a, what would you say?
Yeah, I think incorporating creativity into your working life is something that we could all understand. Like, we're busy, but if you focus on the idea that you're an artist, then you can make stuff all day, you know, whether it's food or conversation, you know, creating a space to share the idea of love.
It reminds me of, I can't remember the artist's name, unfortunately, but something I saw down in the cities at one of the art museums, and the artist referred to himself as a painter, even though none of what we were looking at was paintings. It was like, one thing was he had used a candle to make black marks along a wall, just kind of like, and that's kind of all it was. And then you could kind of see the shape of the candle, and that was it. And I thought, not much of a painting, but, you know, interesting still. And I kind of like the idea of just saying, well, as long as I'm creating something and like, I wish I could explain it better. But anyway, I just thought it was neat and I like that. I just kind of like that line of thinking.
You love modern art.
I don't. Apparently, I think I do. What is your mediums of choice?
I mean, I like to take photographs, and like to paint, watercolor, bake things. That's a medium of art.
Yes.
Yeah. A bunch of other things. I guess I'm open to a lot of...
And herbal.
Sure.
Yeah.
Herbal concoction.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, I love really creating drinks and...
And Emily, although she doesn't speak much about it, makes fiber art that is absolutely astonishingly beautiful.
Yeah. Forgot.
Do so much.
Yeah.
And she's now drawing cute items on the ceramics.
Oh.
So I'll throw items, and then she's now starting to... Paint on the pieces, which is really fun.
Yeah. That is so fun. That reminds me. So during COVID, Charlie started doing pottery, right?
Yeah.
As a hobby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he made all the cups for Dream Cloud.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like right, you never were a potter, right? And then you were bored during COVID. And then all of a sudden you became a potter and made all your own mugs for the cafe.
We made mugs. Yeah. And then we didn't have a studio in the space up north, so we didn't know if we'd be able to make mugs. So we asked our friend Kristen Miller to throw us a bunch of pots for cups for service and stuff. I still have the original mugs from downtown that I use for like cupping or tasting.
A lot of them broke.
And we sold a few to some of our favorite customers downtown. Yeah. But now I finally like got the studio fully powered. We have an external space that's outside of the bakery, which we thought was important to not put glass shards into people's food.
I think I agree with that. Yeah.
Halloween is coming.
So one month a year, you can make an exception.
We went around so many different ideas of how to get the ceramics in the building.
Oh, you did.
I did. Yeah, I but Emily maybe had ruled it out already. But I kept thinking of different corners to stuff the wheel and kiln into.
He's like, we could put it over here. I was like,
But eventually we bit the bullet and have like a what used to be an ice house that's now like a heated, insulated little trailer.
Building. Yeah. When you say ice house, like sawdust and cut the ice out of the lake and store your ice?
No.
No, I wish.
Like a fishing
like
ice
fish
house.
Like not as
cool. Oh, an actual, go out
and go have a dip and pound some Keystone and drive home drunk. Not something I do.
No, of course. No.
But what ice fishing I think of in my mind.
Hey, I'm a big fan of ice fishing.
Have you ever?
I haven't.
Oh, that's funny.
I think if you're ice fishing, it's more like Mad Dog 2020.
Right. Yeah. Bulldog.
Yeah.
Red Dog.
Oh, no.
But yeah, so they cover the holes, put a floor in it, and et cetera.
Tina has a tiny house made out of an ice house.
Yeah.
They built it. It was too heavy to get off the ice and sold it, and that's her tiny house.
Yeah. Happy accidents.
That's nice.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, really? They made an ice house. They're like, this is too heavy.
Well, the kid built it to go, you know, live a life of dreams on the open market in the United States of America and then realized, bum, 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 American dream had died.
Well, I thought you meant there's no ice because it never gets cold enough anymore.
No. He was going to live in there. Oh, that too. He sold a snowmobile earlier that month.
Oh.
No, that's not true.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Going back briefly.
Staying on.
Unrelated and going back.
It makes no sense.
This is just how it goes. I don't know. You guys both worked in the same downtown space, just at very different times.
Oh, yeah.
And this was also like the original idea of all of this coming together was that you had worked at Jitters and then now even you had occupied the Jitters space. And I guess I don't know what my question is, and this happens a lot too. But I just want to know what it was like for you guys working in that same space. Just because it's funny that you guys did.
What was it like for you, Jason?
Yeah, I guess we should definitely start with you, Jason. Yeah.
Well, I love that space and Gary and Jitters, and Gary was a guest on the podcast and Korn and the original crew way back. And and when I first when I'd come and pick up coffee to sell at the cafe, I'd go in there. I was just I'd get goosebumps. It was like I was 19 years old working at this coffee shop and loving it. And now you guys have your dream in this coffee shop. But also, I couldn't believe the difference because, Gary, the way he decorated, he had a fountain and he had the sponge painted walls, Lavazza espresso and everything. He loved French roast and cigarettes. So it's like 9 cups of French roast and cigarettes. So you guys have a little different vibe,
I still do love cigarettes, though.
What?
I do.
I'm not judging. I just am shocked. Because your palate and you're like, you have all these great coffees. It's like, how is that possible?
Yeah, tell me about it.
So you like the...
It's like tasting through frosted glass.
Oh.
But you can... No, I mean, I don't smoke regularly. I smoke...
Pall Malls?
I smoke sometimes.
Lucky Strikes?
American Spirits. Oh, Lucky Strikes. I have smoked Lucky Strikes in Colombia a lot of... A lot of those.
Oh, but, man. Now that's bringing me back to earlier days. If I smoke a cigarette, I throw up.
Yeah. So, what about clove cigarettes? Is that
I love them, but I will throw up. But it makes me think of Lollapalooza and just like the wafting smell of a clove cigarette and Pearl Jam playing in the background.
Yeah, a little patchouli in the air.
Yeah, a little patchouli and Nag Champa. Yeah.
It's like the... Back in the day, going to Charlie Parr concerts, clove cigarettes, patchouli.
Probably quite a bit earlier than that.
Yeah, I suppose.
Although, did see Charlie Parr probably when we first opened this place, so it was pretty close to the patchouli time.
Yeah.
But did patchouli never went out of style, I don't think.
No.
No.
They're still making soap out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just soap.
So we talked a second ago.
No one expected the Dream Cloud Coffee folks to be country kids. Well, not that you are. We don't know. It seems like you might be.
Oh, actually, that's a question I always ask everybody is where they're from. Are you guys from here? Are you from
We're from here.
And and are always happy to stay here? Or were you guys moving away at any point? Or
No.
I had always, when I was younger, planned on leaving.
Oh, yeah.
But then.
No, you know.
Then I fell in love and. Of course, I wanted to stay where
she was.
That's
a really common story I've been hearing,
But also, like, traveling, I've spent a lot of time leaving Duluth and many days outside of the country and some of the most beautiful places on Earth, and I realized that Duluth is one of the most beautiful places on Earth.
Yeah.
You know, I think we were in Ireland, and I was looking up places to go to ahead of us on the trip, and I was looking, you know, on Google, when you search a location, it brings up, like, oh, smattering of photographs, and there's all these beautiful scenic landscapes and architecture, and then I just, for shits and giggles, searched Duluth, Minnesota, and the photos that came up there were unparalleled, and it just reminded me of how amazing and lovely this place is.
Easy to come home with that in mind,
That's what I do when I'm coming back from a trip, and then I'll read restaurant reviews of Duluth restaurants.
just to balance it out.
Yeah. Just to see who else is getting a one-star review, just to, like, get ready. It is beautiful. Yeah. Prepare yourself.
Yeah. Cook at home.
So when you make your own pottery, though, and a glass breaks, is it sadder or okay?
I think it's, I like it. I kind of do.
Like, oh.
Especially because you make so many.
A new beginning.
Yeah. I hold on to a couple pieces that are chipped or broken to remind me that, you know, that happens.
Better than your teeth.
Yeah. I have a few of those, too.
I know.
Oh.
Thank
you. And a gold one.
And a gold one.
Yeah. Oh, that's like full gold. Wow, look at that.
I got
that's
it when cool I was looking.
He's a gangster.
Kicked off my parents' insurance.
Oh, you know. You could only afford gold?
Well, it was covered.
He did it on purpose.
It was before I was removed from the insurance, so I thought, okay, this is the last dental work I'm going to have done in a while, and if I don't come upon any money in the next few years, I might have to sell this tooth.
This never gets old.
It's your savings.
Yeah. It's like a backup
savings.
Plan.
Always. Yeah. That's still there.
An interesting IRA.
Yeah.
Well.
Tell us about the food that you guys are doing. Because when you were downtown, you had a little bit of. Do you have any food?
What? No.
No. But now you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the bakery? What's
what did you bake to yesterday?
What was yesterday? Sunday?
What was
it? Monday?
Yeah, what was yesterday?
Yesterday was Sunday.
Or last time you baked. Let's not. We don't have to be too specific.
No, that's okay. I do remember what we baked.
I do remember, I
Sunday.
Swear.
We baked a lot, actually, but we made focaccia and apple butter brioche buns. And we made cinnamon rolls and hand pies, or like, you know, little
savory
miniature
or
pies,
sweet
apple.
The French call them galettes.
Yes, galettes. And
but the French are usually wrong.
And pumpkin bread. And I don't know what else. Cookies. Yeah.
That's why they brought in Snoop to validate their experience in Paris.
Snoop Dogg?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the Olympics?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was really lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, what does Snoop Dogg have to do with Paris or for the French?
I didn't know. I saw him in Spain.
What?
I was in the airport in Barcelona and Snoop Dogg and his entourage was there. Oh. And it definitely smelled like weed.
Yeah, I believe that.
I think Snoop has a cafe in Amsterdam.
I don't doubt it.
With cannabis sales and coffee, specialty coffee, believe it or not. He got into a brand of Robusta cold brew. Robusta cold brew.
That sounds dangerous.
It was based in Indonesia. He was an investor. It was all like based off
Indonesian
Snoop.
Robusta
and then
cold
he bailed. Brew. Yeah. And he quit.
Explain what that might taste like. Explain Arabica and Robusta and what a Robusta cold press might taste like. I've never tasted it. It sounds like
that
gasoline.
One of us here doesn't know what you're talking about.
So Arabica's a higher quality variety. of coffee.
Higher
altitude, less resistance to pests and temperatures, higher temperatures. And Robusta is, I guess, considered a little bit lower quality. It grows at lower elevations and is resistant to pests and temperatures, so it can take some heat.
Like Vietnam and...
Yep. I think they're one of the highest exporters of Robusta coffee. But yeah, it ends up just being a little bit more harsh, a little bit more bitter, higher caffeine.
Oilier, yeah. Gasolinier.
Yeah, it's just... And more affected by the infrastructure at hand. It's because it's of lower value, I think it's not handled with as much care. So packaging isn't protected from diesel fumes. It's not covered.
Oh, that's the diesel taste.
If it's in a container on the back of a truck, all the fumes in the air that are...
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's being absorbed.
And maybe in a really rural area where they don't have a way to process it, so maybe starts...
Molding
and decomposing on the way in the cherries because they can't process it without water and...
So it's just less quality. But now they're trying to change that by paying more attention to it and its growth process, how it matures and when it's picked, and then how it's processed. And they're seeing some changes in the cut profiles overall.
Do you have any Robusta that you would ever roast?
I'm not ruling it out. I'm open to it.
If you do, I want to taste it.
Yeah. I think that it's not a bad idea.
Do you blend any into any espresso?
I currently do not have any Robusta. Okay.
But that's the Italians always would, because it's higher caffeine too, right?
Yep. I think it's a part of like the Illy 7 bean blend or whatever they call that.
Probably Lavazza and some of their lines too.
Yeah. And Robusta has often been used in espresso to not only reduce the cost, but increase the amount of caffeine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it holds up to roast pretty well. So something that, you know, an Arabica variety that might not take a heavily roasted profile, like a really dark roast, a Robusta might be able to stand up to it.
Hmm.
But. That's been ruled out for the most part, yeah.
I remember my friend came back from Sri Lanka and brought me some green beans, and I brought it down to get... Maybe you roasted it.
Maybe.
You were working with Eric back then, and I remember it was like, just like a lot of things, like a code word, like eclectic is a word, right?
That
people would call me. He's eclectic, you know, so it's kind of like a code word, like weird... Dude.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like the code word was like, oh, it's very rustic.
Yeah.
And I was like, that sounds like eclectic to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, I mean, and it was terrible. It's like, I wonder if you did roast it, but it's terrible. It was like undrinkable. I was like, this is rustic would be a nice way to put it.
Well, that's where the nomenclature robust comes from. Ugh. Robusta.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that. I was wondering what came first, chicken or egg and that. Yeah.
See, I don't know that for sure, but I'm assuming Robusta was first, but maybe not.
I assume it has something to do with like equating like pheromones and like sweat. It's like, this is Robusta. It's like, yeah, you haven't showered in 3 weeks. Very Robusta. Everyone knows you're here.
It's in reference to the farmer picking it, not even the bean.
Yeah.
Between the diesel and the sweat drippings.
Mm-hmm. and the mold.
I'm then curious how Arabica came into being.
I think it was the Virgin Mary.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Angel gave it up to one more amazing
miracle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So were you roasting coffee before you were making it, or were you making it then getting into roasting?
I kind of came into all of it at once.
Didn't you have the popcorn popper roaster?
I never used that. No.
You never did that?
No.
Were you ever at Dunn Brothers?
Nope.
No, you weren't in that group?
No, I came into coffee, and I mean, my first experience with coffee, I did a 7-cup table of coffees from Bali.
Mm.
So it was like, you know, instantly stepping into some of the most beautiful flavors in the world.
Bali coffee, you think, is some of the best?
I think it's, I mean.
Is it low altitude though, huh?
Some of it, yeah. But I think just the uniqueness of the profile, and it was especially great Arabica coffee. And it was, I mean, by no means can you compare it to like a 90-point Ethiopia or something like that. But I do believe that it was quite a lovely
introduction. Where was this at? I mean, that's a
It was in
story.
Downtown Duluth.
Huh.
I had a small specialty coffee shop down there.
Very unique boutique and obscure at the time, because I've never had a Bali coffee.
No, it was probably, I would say maybe some of the first, like, especially great coffee for town. Roasted in a modern style.
And modern is light.
Lighter,
almost always light.
Yeah, definitely. I think dark roast evolved to mask imperfections. And then over time, as those imperfections went away in the processing and growing techniques, the masking of those flavors that's no longer necessary.
If anyone's ever looked at Dream Cloud's coffee, that we usually have a couple for sale at the cafe, and these guys I just sent them a message and they just pretty much pick something cool. And I mean, it's really, I've talked to Charlie about this and the dedication to where it comes from and the farmers and the unique alliances that make it happen. It's really hard to do coffee right now because of the environmental problems and the weather patterns and the third world issues and then the world coffee taste it keeps growing, and countries that weren't into coffee are into coffee now. China's into coffee, Japan's into coffee, places that were into tea are into coffee now. So wouldn't you say it's almost the hardest time ever to find really great coffee?
I think so. I don't know. I don't know if that's totally. I think it's probably easier than ever.
Easier to find great coffee.
To buy green coffee that's of higher quality. There's more of it than there ever has been, probably.
Okay. But because it's not being like bought up and allocated, because it's on a higher level than, say, the major corporations want to deal with? Or?
I think it's a tricky game. You know, most people want that pinnacle, right? They want the best of the best.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna go out on a limb and say the people that are pushing it the hardest, I'd say it's probably the smallest percentage of their offerings. I think it's a lot easier to sell lower quality coffee still.
Yeah, because people,
it's cheaper.
It's cheaper. It's affordable. And
yeah. And I think the market still is attached to a profile that's of lower quality, or at least resonates with lower quality, but it's transitioning. You know, so I think we've got a lot to do with like education and just like language.
Yeah,
sharing ideas that it's not right for me to tell you that what you like is wrong and that you should drink what I think is the best. You know, I think it's okay for it to happen over time.
I want you to talk a little bit just about coffee and the styles a little bit. I don't think everyone knows what happens with coffee, how it comes from the cherry, how it might be left in the cherry, might be natural, might be honey processed, might be washed, might be anaerobic. And I also don't think people understand the difference of soil and how it's grown, how it's cared for. We could even just start with the last shipment that you sent me. I just yesterday had the Kenya, mm-hmm. which I love, and it was washed, which I've been really into the naturals for a long time, and it was really refreshing to have a very bright, fruity Kenyan. It's normally very earthy, and this was very bright.
Yeah,
almost. I don't
tasted
even,
almost like a natural.
It was really good.
Yeah,
I was like blown away by that one. So, but I bet you. So you know the farmers, I'm guessing, on that one, and
a little less so. I mean, Kenya's still in a place where there's a large group of farmers.
Because it's a cooperative.
It's a cooperative.
Yeah. The whole country still is.
Yep.
And that's what made them so great as coffee producers, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was a collaborative effort. A lot of people are putting out product, but it also puts it, from an ethical standpoint, in also a very precarious position. Because these producers don't have any control over the coffee once it goes to the mill.
Yeah, so everyone puts their stuff in, and it's a kind of a cooperative, and they all share the benefits of the market, because it's. I've met some Kenyan farmers, and I was trying to understand it, but maybe you could explain that a little better, how that bargaining works. I don't quite understand it exactly.
I haven't seen it directly at the mill level in Kenya, but from what I've seen in Colombia, which maybe might not even be a great comparison, but the idea is that a farmer's going to go to the mill nearest to them usually. Oftentimes the producer doesn't have access to a vehicle, so they're either carrying their coffee or moving it with a borrowed truck or whatever it may be, or they're working with another member of the cooperative. And in some places even they have collectors that pick up the coffee. But that acts as almost like a credit card processor.
They take a percentage.
Taking a piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anybody who is helping you is always taking a piece. So
yeah.
I think that's the issue with cooperatives at times, is that cooperatives help producers by giving them access to like inputs, agricultural inputs, like nutrients for the soil. And an agronomist is usually on staff at a cooperative like that. So they would have access to information that helps in the discussion about yields and varieties. But these are all very macro sort of suggestions. They're, I guess you would say, old school farming and agricultural practices. They're looking for high yields, disease resistance.
Like corn, Monsanto kind of.
Yeah. And they're providing you with inputs that are, albeit maybe organic, but they're still chemical inputs. And
when you say inputs, almost like fertilizer.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the concept there is, yeah, everybody's got the help, but they're all doing it the same. And if the person providing that expertise, so to speak, is ill-motivated, then everybody's got the same boat.
Yeah.
That they're in. So I think there's been a discussion in coffee about Kenya, and they've seen, I think, a lot of changes.
So Ethiopia is so delicious and possibly one of my favorite coffees I've ever had. Yirgacheffe especially.
Mm-hmm.
So that does not follow the path at all of Kenya at all.
I think in a way it's similar. The main difference would be Kenya having the colonialist influence from Britain.
Is that what created the bargaining stuff?
That's what created the infrastructure. So they created the mills. They created all the bargaining and
so it's like, we'll create this infrastructure influence. And here's some, this is easier way to get your stuff to the world.
But when it comes down to it, they'll remind you, and I heard this, it's not an exact feeling of place for Kenya, but I heard a British man say to a group of Papua New Guinea farmers one time, we'll have to remind them who butters their bread. So I think there's still that colonialist culture ever present, whether they
remind Papua New Guinea who's buttering their bread?
They had some producers who were having a spiritual service during one day in the week. They didn't want them to have it. And since they're above them on the hill, they had control of their water rights. And they said, maybe we'll have to cut off their water on that day so they stop being so loud. And then that might remind them who butters their bread. But he was a very bird-friendly guy, nonetheless.
We all have our faults. Going along this same kind of thought process, how does somebody in this case, Duluth, end up even getting involved and become knowledgeable about that part of the world and that industry and everything? Why does it even almost matter to you here? And
you've been to Papua New Guinea, right?
Yeah.
And you've been to Colombia. You've been to
Peru, Mexico, Costa Rica.
And you've bought coffee. You've went with cash to buy.
Yeah, I think the idea is you get the opportunity to go to these places through an importer. And in our case, it was an importer known as Cafe Imports. They're based in originally St. Paul, now Minneapolis. They brought coffee to the Midwest in an accessible way where you could order overnight and get the coffee the next day. In years past, you have coffee coming from Oakland or your coffee coming from New York City or New Jersey. And it takes longer, it costs more. And they were like, hey, here's a simple idea. Let's open an importer in the Midwest and give access. And honestly, I think the specialty coffee scene followed the access to the specialty coffee, which was originally created in the Midwest by, Cafe Imports, I think.
Do you think? That's interesting.
Do you disagree?
I don't know.
I mean, there was an awareness.
I just don't know. Oh. I'm curious.
Okay.
I think there was an awareness of it, and obviously there was roasters bringing in coffee that was of higher quality from the annex or whatnot, but I think that the booming of specialty coffee and multiple cafes
came out of the
roasters,
Midwest.
I think Cafe Imports played a large role in creating the environment for that to happen.
That's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to hear.
Because at the time, they were in Minneapolis. They both worked at restaurants. And they were like, we have all these beautiful ingredients going to these restaurants. Everybody's worried about all this stuff, but nobody cares about the coffee.
Well, that's always been a problem from the beginning. Every great restaurant has terrible coffee.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, do you dare order an espresso, even though that tiramisu or the whatever delicious dessert looks great, but
right?
I don't really. You look.
There's
back,
still Heinz ketchup
you
on the table.
You hear the milk burning and the it's like the pods
it
in
is.
The back, and you're like
Yeah, it's interesting when you go to a place and they have when you look it up, it's like a $20,000 espresso machine. It's brand new, all sparkling clean. And then you have a cup, and it's
brutal.
Bad.
Yeah,
it's bad. So that all comes down to beans?
I blame the people.
Every step.
It's always back to the
water
people.
Water filtration, cleaning, grind, tamping.
I know people with access to the best coffee in the world, and they still ruin it.
Okay,
And then there's people that grow the best coffee in the world,
don't even get to have it.
Yeah. I've been to Costa Rica, Nicaragua, and it's like the coffee they're drinking is pre-ground with sugar added.
Yeah.
It's like so unbelievably undrinkable. It's like the worst coffee ever.
I think that's why we have a responsibility. It's like, are we trying to create value, or are we trying to take it for granted? You know, like we get this stuff and it's already really well thought out for, it's cared for. People spend their whole lives trying to make it better, and then we get it here. And I think sometimes it's more important for people to put it in a nice package and collect their money than it is to make a good product.
It's kind of like wineries where you get some juice from Argentina and you make wine and then you put it into a wine slushy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you're not really a winery, are you? I mean, I'm not trying to get fired from any gigs in the future.
No.
But I don't know. It's like all these wineries in a row up by Luckenbach. It's like, where do you grow grapes in the... they don't grow any grapes. It's like winery. Same thing. It's kind of like, it's like the lack of respect for what it is, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think people try, they latch on to something that they see as being a valuable resource for economic, I don't know.
It's hip.
Success.
Yeah.
Or whatever you want to call it. Like, I got my foot in the door. I know kind of about this, and I'll take advantage of the consumer's ignorance and make a bunch of money. So I think that happens quite a bit.
So how are you taking advantage of this ignorance?
We try not to get too involved in that realm. Like, I don't think we don't express that we're experts. We don't express that we know more than the next person. We are seeking beautiful coffees to share with beautiful people. And it's more about love and making a living and having a happy life. Then it has nothing to do with all that other stuff. The details go together, of course. Mm-hmm. And we care about things in the background that not everybody's thinking about. But I don't think it's that important for us to tell people all those things.
I think we just care about taste.
When people go, if you haven't been, when you go to Dream Cloud, and I unfortunately haven't been to the new space, but
worth going to.
I know it'll be a beautiful experience, because even your downtown location, it's like when I come in to just pick up coffee, it's like, it's so calming and so zen. And going back, I guess we kind of left off, you know, it's like when I worked at Jitters, it was a different vibe. And now when you guys took it over, Bakehouse, it was a different vibe. And then you took it over and it was like the most zen, calm, cool space in the most small little place, the smallest little roastery. And everything was so amazing. And when you told me about your new idea, I just thought, this is amazing, you know.
Thanks, Jason.
It's like I just love the idea of it, and I love that space too, you know.
Yeah.
Did you guys totally gut it and renovate it? Did you just leave what was there?
Oh no, we did a lot of renovations in it. But I mean, it had really good bones. You know, it's like, but yeah, we did a lot of.
I wonder if it still had our old pastry case still there, because when Mickey ran it and when it was a Mocha Mousse, I gave her a pastry case.
No.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely like, it needed to be loved. The building did. It just was, you know, you could tell it just needed to be taken care of.
Is there a piano still?
It is. The piano still in there, yeah. No. It had so much potential. I mean, that was like my main thing where I was like, this is. I could like see it all.
It's a cool space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a perfect space.
Yeah. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work. It was a lot.
It will still be a lot of work.
Yeah, and it still is every day. But like the renovating of it and all that, but it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's really nice. I mean, every day I come down there and I'm like, wow, you did that. Literally, every day I'm like, that's cool. Okay.
We've just been every day we're really lucky to have this space, and we're really lucky we got the opportunity to like put our creativity into it and turn it around and open the doors. And we just literally in the mornings and in the evenings, we just say, gosh, this is great. We're really thankful to have it and to be able to do that on a daily basis. And I'm
it's
just
simple,
very thankful.
That's what it is.
It's a dream.
Yeah. The name makes it like more fitting, because it is. It's like our dream come true.
Yeah. And
I think when you have a dream come true like that, it's inevitable that you're going to want to share it with people. Mm-hmm. And
it's the only kind of like sharing dream that has a cloud that doesn't need the internet.
Right. And we don't have the internet there.
Yes, we do.
Well, you don't have cell coverage.
Yeah. Do you have a preference between roasting and making coffee itself? Or Emily, who does the roasting?
Charlie roasts coffee. That's what I kind of thought.
So
I don't. I think they're two drastically different things. To me, roasting is a very like intimate time, and I get very protective of it.
So, like a dark room.
Yeah, kind of. I really don't like when people.
What is the process? Because actually, I don't. Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know.
It's basically just drying, and.
Is there like a machine you put it in? Or
yeah, there's a big machine that's.
You really don't know. I literally don't know at all. Yeah. I know there is. Right. I know there is a process, yeah. But yeah.
Did you take a blowtorch?
Well, I'm like, I don't know. Maybe he said drying. Maybe he puts on a big rack.
You put it behind your muffler, and it's like gets real hot, and that's how you get that.
Yeah. Well, then also because I don't know. Like, well, like you, if you were to go buy like a Starbucks bag of coffee, it's bad, whatever.
Yeah,
and
you just wrecked that sponsorship.
Yeah. Damn. I mean, then you guys are really good, and so it's just like but surely you guys are all basically doing the same thing. Yeah. But.
Most people are doing the same thing. It's time, temperature, and there's a vessel. You put your coffee, your green coffee. It comes as a raw seed, and you get a bag of it, and you decide, you know, what your capacity is on the machine you're using. And that machine is either powered by propane or natural gas or wood fire or electricity. Yeah.
Isn't there air, too? Or
and
air
then some
are,
roasters use conduction, and some use convection, and some use a combination of the two. There's drum roasting, and there's air roasting, which is the main delineation.
What do you drum?
We have a drum roaster, which is a combination of conductive and convective heat. Which
so it's
most
hot,
people,
it's turning, and then it's blowing hot air in too.
Yep. Yeah. So it's this balance, and you can control to affect how the heat influences the coffee and how the air influences the coffee.
So you can get like kind of a greasy, kind of like a cast iron pan thing going, and then you're blowing some hot air to dry the oil off.
It is cast iron, right? The whole.
The drum is made of cast iron and different components like the faceplate or the back plate going into the venting. An exhaust area, it's like they sometimes use cast iron for that because it maintains heat and radiates heat rather well. But yeah, that's the nerdy side of coffee roasting is every coffee roaster I've ever met, the first question they ask me is, what do you roast on and how big is it? And it's like, I don't know, they're like car guys and I've never liked that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I've got the biggest roaster ever and I love it,
I
don't know how to use it.
It's like a church PA.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you got a huge organ, but the Rolling Stones have never played here.
So he's asking, what are the basic steps of it? Like, where do you start? You put the beans
You put the beans in what's called the green hopper.
Okay. I know what a hopper is from Minecraft. Yeah. So.
And it's that. Or like,
closer.
Yeah.
And the green beans go into the drum by releasing the green door.
That's it. So it all kind of like.
Not to be confused with the Green Door Pub in Beaver Bay. They have not sponsored this message, but we'll be seeking their sponsorship shortly.
Yes, that's indeed.
Right. Does it come out of a brown door then at the end? Or does there not a
excuse me? It's a PG podcast.
It was.
All
it
I
never
said.
Was. It
all
never was.
I said was brown door. Everything else was everyone else is doing.
I'd like to take this moment to pay homage to Nat Harvey. They brought the idea of hot brown into my consciousness, and I will forever remember them bringing that.
Thanks into a lot.
The coffee culture.
Yeah. Google's going to be like infiltrated by five people.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah.
Hot brown. But eventually then, it comes out hot and brown. And
so it does, see?
Sometimes black, and it's just. I mean, that's the Maillard reaction. It's the process of browning. And then there's caramelization at hand. So you try to balance those factors.
And the cracks.
There's cracks. First crack is the beginning of a caramelization. And also at
where it's like the bean is popping.
It's popping, yeah.
Like the moisture inside is being released.
It's being released and
boiling over and pop.
It's popping.
Like popcorn.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And
pop beans.
You want to make sure at this time you still have enough moisture left in the coffee. You haven't used too much air and dried it out because while things are caramelizing, they still need moisture to protect themselves. So they're not getting scorched and there's burnt flavors that come along with that. But and then you balance out this caramelization with this browning and you try not to get really boring flavors and you try not to mask the complex flavors with roast. And really you're trying to, the same way a painter might like paint something without leaving the resemblance of the brush. I always feel like that's kind of how I look at it. It's like I want to roast something without affecting it in any obvious way by human intervention.
But then along those same lines, how much human intervention is there in that process? Like
very little.
So it's just kind of like fine-tuning settings at this point, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, for me, it's more manual. Like, I don't have a lot of bells and whistles. It's listening and visual cues. And there's a general, like, pressure in the air when the coffee's roasting. You can feel shifts in the roast. Like, there's been times where I've been in the other room and the pilot light will go out and you can feel a shift in sort of in the pressure in the room as the coffee's roasting.
Interesting.
Or if it's really hot outside and it's hot in the room, there's different pressure as that heat leaves the building.
And are you compensating for, like, for weather and stuff as well? Like,
I mean, it plays a role for sure in how the coffee is.
Oh, like humidity?
Yep.
I mean, is it ever to the point where you would say, I can't do it today, it's too...
I've never done that, no. I mean, it's been hot to the point where doing a lot of batches in a day, it starts to be like, I wouldn't recommend it, because the drum gets hot, the room gets hot, and you don't have as much control.
Sure. And it's probably too, like, mixing a record where you start doing the same thing so much, you get numb.
Yeah.
And then you don't trust your own judgment. Yeah, you get...
And you're hot and sweaty, and you're like, I mean, it's not an easy gig either.
Pop, go.
Yeah.
Well, and that's like the problem with mass scale, too, you know, right? It's like production.
Yeah.
Computers, go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard.
I don't think I've never seen a coffee roaster improve by roasting more coffee, but like more batches maybe, but like more quantity.
No.
I've never.
It'd just be hard. That's with everything. Yeah. It's like the more,
like,
you know,
breweries, et cetera. It's like. Yeah.
And also on top of it, if you screw up
five pounds
of coffee versus 500 pounds,
yeah,
you have to almost sell it even if it's not the way you want it.
Yeah.
Out of basic nuts and bolts. I mean, if you screw up 1,000 kegs versus 5 kegs,
yeah,
it's like you almost have to keep going.
But then that's multifaceted, because you've also stopped being creative and taking experimental choices at hand, because you don't want to anymore because it's too much of a risk.
And that's the problem with things of scale.
Yeah, you can't make a fun special beer for a certain event because
you can't have a fun special cheese because you know, it's like
you only got cheddar.
Yeah. You only got cheddar.
Yeah.
And butter burgers.
Yeah.
Sorry, Culver.
Crinkle fries. Yeah.
They're not listening.
They're definitely not listening.
Sorry, Culver.
They don't care.
I've never had a butter burger, but now I better
go get
one. I
avoided butter burgers for a long time because I would hear it and go, "Oh, that sounds gross." Like,
yeah.
Butter? Like, just like, what do you. How much butter?
A lot.
Like, yeah.
But if it was a buttered ham bun in a Lutheran church basement.
Ooh. Yum.
You want a lot of butter.
What's with that?
Church.
Butter
that ham.
No.
It's the ham of God.
Yeah. Butter.
Not to be confused with the Lamb of God.
Yeah. Well, I think we're about at that time. unless anyone has anything else they'd want to bring up, Jason or anybody. If you have any questions,
well, how long of a bike ride do you think it would be to get there? I bet it would only be 30 minutes to an hour, depending on your speed. What do you think?
I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
So I think it's a perfect bike ride for fall colors to go out to Dream Cloud along Scenic Highway 61.
No, I would just like to note, because we are back in time, this episode will be coming out on November 5th. So... weather permitting.
Yes.
Weather permitting. Who knows? It might still be.
No,
I mean, it could still be warm.
Humanly permissible.
Yeah. I wouldn't do that.
Take advantage of your $3,000 mountain bikes that have huge tires.
Yeah.
Use them in the outdoors during inclement conditions.
Put that fat tire where your mouth is.
Correct.
I mean, that would be
at the very least, you'd know you get a good cup of coffee at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you going to stay open all winter?
We most likely are, yes. We will probably take a little break in January, but then we'll be open. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about your hours currently are.
My next question, exactly, yeah.
Ooh. Wednesday through Sunday.
Yep.
From 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
That's what I've written down.
And then you might try to keep that rolling through January until you take a break.
Yep.
And
then
come back and keep it rolling.
Yeah, we're going to,
Cool. We kind of want to try some. We do bake bakery, and we thought since it's slower in the wintertime and one of us can be in the back and one of us could be out front making coffee, it might allow us the opportunity to make some more savory foods like dare I say dumplings or soup or soup dumplings or meatballs or whatever. whatever we want.
Crinkle fries.
Crinkle fries.
No,
crinkle fries.
Might I recommend.
Clovers up north there.
Tidal back around. Dino Nuggies.
Oh, and, homemade Dino Nuggets.
And then you could even do your own little mashed potato volcanoes and everything. It could be on a little plate, like three little nuggies.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah, you're going to have to go buy some.
There's different shapes. It's like T-Rex.
Wait. This whole time you haven't even known about Dino Nuggies?
I don't know Dino Nuggies.
No, you're not.
I don't have kids. I left off with Barney the purple dinosaur, and I just never looked back.
There's a Barney-shaped Dino Nugget.
I don't doubt it.
T-Rex.
Is that what Barney was?
I thought he was a brontosaurus.
Is he?
I don't know. I thought he was a pedophile, actually.
Yeah. I think he's a cross between two dinosaurs.
Maybe. This episode's been one of the weird ones where I keep like going, wait, where? How did we end up at this? I don't. Yeah. Keep getting lost. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Sorry, we're putting this out there.
Make sure to go to Dream Club,
where all ideas are accepted.
Also, is there anywhere that people should like follow you online to kind of keep up with things, or is it just
Come to the cafe? But we have an Instagram, and we post on occasionally. But
if you must, there is an Instagram.
There is. Yep. Dream Club Coffee Roasters.
But do not. We cannot guarantee that all things on there will be up to date or accurate according to current constructs.
There we go.